Scripture reading will be from the book of 2 Corinthians, chapter 6, verses 14 through 18. Again, that's 2 Corinthians 6, 14 through 18. Do not be bound together with unbelievers. For what partnership have righteousness and lawlessness? Or what fellowship has light with darkness? Or what harmony has Christ with Belial? Or what has a believer in common with an unbeliever? Or what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God, just as God said, I will dwell in them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Therefore, come out from their midst and be separate, says the Lord, and do not touch what is unclean. And I will welcome you, and I will be a father to you, and you shall be sons and daughters to me, says the Lord Almighty.
There is one more announcement. It's one of those things you get announcements, you don't think to pass them on until the guy gets up to give the announcements. Okay. So we got a call from Greg Tracy just before services, and he had some sort of procedure. I won't go into that. A little bit painful, I guess, and exploratory last Friday. And the doctors, told him to keep, bed rest for a couple of days because he plans on going back to work Tuesday. So it's good news, but he just couldn't be here today because of the bed rest. So he wanted to pass that on. Tonight's lesson is sort of an unusual topic, kind of new, I guess. Not from the biblical point, we always have problems, with doctrinal errors, but just in the nature of the kind of beast we're going to look at, there's a new thing out called Chrislam, and somebody gave me a heads up on this. And if you can see by the picture, barely, it says Buell, and it goes the Cumberland Presbyterian Church. And over here it says, First Chrislamic Congregation, Baptisms, and Salat al-Jamaah. So there's now a growing denomination, I guess, of what is putting Christianity and Islam together into what they call Chrislam. Okay. Now, this is an attempt by liberal churches in this country to join Christianity and whatever. It is really beyond ignorance and a little bit insane if you know anything about either religion. They don't mix well at all, but people are trying to. Churches in Atlanta, Georgia, Seattle, Washington, Detroit, Michigan, and other places have preached sermons and held Sunday school lessons on the founder of Islam, Muhammad, who Muslims consider a prophet, and even Qurans are also being placed in the pews next to Bibles. Now, I would like to start a class on Saturdays. I'll let you know when it's coming up on Islam if you want to know more about it. But I'm not going to get into too much of it in the pulpit because that's not the place for it. And it wouldn't be any better than these individuals. But those pushing this program claim that Christians cannot love their neighbors without having a relationship with them. Well, we're supposed to love our enemies, but you don't necessarily have to have a relationship with your enemy, especially if it's Satan himself. And I know the kids like to say, well, experience is the best teacher, but again, the codicil, only the worst students need the best teacher. And so, well, we try to learn from other people's mistakes instead of making them ourselves. Some instances of this, the Seattle priest has become a Muslim while also retaining her clergy status in the Episcopal Church. Her local bishop has described the development as exciting. I look through Jesus and I see Allah, explained the Reverend Ann Holmes, reading to the Seattle Times, which reported that reading put on her Islamic headscarf on Fridays and her clerical collar on Sundays. She still sees Jesus as her Savior, but she doesn't seem anymore as divine. And this is the problem. You try to mix Christianity with other things, and the Christianity is going to suffer. In fact, in this case, it looks like it's already suffered, and this is what opens the door for the Islam. And she says she plans to remain both a priest and Episcopalian. Bishop Vincent Warner of the Episcopal Diocese of Olympia told the Seattle Times that Redding's embrace of Islam has not been controversial in this diocese. Nobody said anything? The attitude of this movement cannot be expressed any better than this. Possibly it's telling. You know, they obviously do not know the scriptures. And when people are ignorant of the scriptures, they'll allow anything to creep in. But there's something more shocking than this, and almost beyond imagination, and that is getting into the area of Nigeria, which has been a hotbed of persecution, murders, and the like, all perpetrated by the Muslims against mostly Christians. Now it is also a focus for this Islamic movement. Here's a statement of one of their leaders that could not be more wrong. He said, "Islam is a religion of peace." In a moment, you know, we're going to look at what the word Islam really means, and it's not peace. And it talks about being a religion of love. The word love never occurs in the Quran. And of miracles, Muhammad refused to do miracles, like Joseph Smith. You accept it or you're a heathen. When you're talking about miracles, Islam is a miracle itself. The founding of the Quran itself, a miracle. Pastor Shamsuddin Saka. Okay. A lot of this is erroneous talk. In fact, goes on to say, you know, the very opposite of this is true. But this is something we continue to hear even from our political leaders. But get into a little bit of history here. It was incredible to me, you know, if you know anything about history, you know, that a lot of the blacks in our country began to take on Islamic names. I guess as a reaction against what they felt was the white man's religion and Christianity. You know, somehow people don't relate that Christianity is actually a Mideastern religion if you want to give it a source. But when you consider, you know, I know, you know, slavery was actually a horrendous time in our country. But people focus on it too much and exclude the surrounding history around it. Things were terrible perpetrations of the use of humanity. But often what's glossed over is the fact of what all people did in order to secure the liberty of people that were enslaved, whether they were blacks or indentured servants, which were Europeans. In this country, many people did run the underground railways, as they call them. They stood up for, you know, not only the blacks, but the Indians, whatever. A lot of manumission took place. A lot of people aren't told the history of the United States, that a lot of blacks were set free even before the Revolution, and they fought in the Revolution against the British. The manumission kept on, so actually before the Civil War, there were more blacks, you know, turned free in the South than in the North. And it was only because men like Stephen Douglas began to stir the pot that we actually had to go to war. Our founding fathers actually thought that, you know, since the spirit of all men are created equal seemed to be catching on, there wasn't a need to do anything about it because people were handling it personally. But then we had to go into civil war, and one of the main principles that people went to fight was to free the slaves, as they put it. And basically, we forget the numbers that more Americans died in the Civil War than all other wars since then combined. Okay. They gave their lives for, you know, other people, not considering, you know, where they came from or what color they were or whatever. But even more to the point, they don't ask themselves, you know, where did slavery begin? You know, especially for the black slaves. Even before, you know, the American Revolution and the times that went on, there was no European expeditions into Africa. There was a reason why they called it Darkest Africa. Nobody's been there, or very few. So how do you get black people out of the middle of Africa when there's no whites there? And, you know, blame slavery on the whites. Well, the thing is, like now, they still have tribal confrontations. You know, blacks don't get along with blacks, you know, in a tribal setting, just as Indians didn't. You know, the noble red man, people forget that a lot of the Indian tribes were, you know, slaughtered by other Indians. And Fenimore Cooper's The Last of the Mohicans, why do you figure there was a last Mohican? Why we don't have a lot of the agrarian Indians in the Southwest is because the Navajo were very warlike and they moved in and, you know, took over their lands. Anyway, getting back to Africa, it was the blacks that made slaves of the blacks to begin with. And to sell the blacks, you know, their slaves, they went north and sold them to the Muslims. You know, they had a going, you know, slavery industry, which is still going on in Chad and Sudan. In fact, you know, from the time of Muhammad, Islam's been very aggressive. As the nation welled up, you know, the movement of Islam and the Muslims, they pretty much took over most of the Middle East. This is why the Holy Land fell to the Muslims. And during the Crusades of, you know, 1000 and 1100, the Crusades going back to rescue the Holy Land, there was a confrontation of Catholics, I'm not going to call them Christians, Catholics and Muslims. And we find in this just a very warlike people. In fact, the only time that Christians and Muslims got along was when in Jerusalem they had to side with one another to face, you know, a common enemy, Kublai Khan and the Golden Horde. You know, the Mongolians were on the move, you know, and wanting to conquer a lot of things. But anyway, the Muslims pursued, you know, to take over all of North Africa, okay, into Spain, which was, they called Moorish Spain. And if you know anything about history, man, you wouldn't make any jokes about the Poles. The Polish people basically almost sacrificed their nationality twice to throw everything they had at the invading Muslims that wanted to take over Europe. They were the ones that stopped them. And so what you have then is the whole Mediterranean, east, west, and south, completely dominated by, well, what they used to call it back then, the Mediterranean was a Muslim lake or an Ottoman lake. The Ottoman Empire out of Asia Minor ruled the whole thing. The Barbarossas took over Algiers, and the two brothers with red beards. And they were the pirates of the Mediterranean, and any European getting into the Mediterranean was basically boarded on their ships and either taken as slaves south into Africa, or they were held as, you know, for ransom among those. You know, a lot of scholars speculate this is why Columbus, you know, had such a good backing by Isabella to go west, because they couldn't do any trading in, you know, on the Mediterranean or east. Now, all this is a rise of a very violent, you know, very domineering, you know, Islamic movement. You know, and to call it a religion of peace is just insane. For the blacks to think they can call themselves Muslim, and it seems to make sense, you know, that it's a more peaceful way of going, when they're, the Muslims were the very ones that enslaved them to begin with and sold them to a few, you know, white traders, you know, for slavery. So when you don't know your history, you know, you make a lot of mistakes in your life and in your choices. Let me take this on. There's another false statement by Saka. He said that Abraham has many children. Abraham is the father of Christianity and the father of Islam. Why is the Christian and the Muslim fighting? Well, basically, I told you, we don't get along together. In fact, you know, these erroneous things are all the cover-up of trying to get people to accept Islam, You know, when anybody that knows the scriptures knows that Abraham wasn't necessarily the father of Christianity, Christ was. And you know, Abraham wasn't the father of Islam, Muhammad was. And we'll get a little bit more into this anyway. But you know, why are they fighting? Because the ideologies are totally different. Now, someone once said, if you want to know what a religion is, look at its core beliefs. If you look at Christianity, the core beliefs of Christianity as taught by Christ is a religion of peace. Christianity spread in the first, second, and third centuries in very peaceful means. That's what Christians believed. In fact, Jesus told Pilate, if my kingdom was this earth, then would my servants fight. But they didn't. And they promoted it, you know, out of love and everything else. If you find a Christian that's fighting in a very warlike, you know, attitude of things, he's someone that's moved away from his core beliefs. As which, you know, Catholicism did. You know, that comes from the time of Augustine, who basically put it out there, if salvation is in the church, we are required even by point of sword to bring men into it. And that began, you know, the Crusades, the conquests, you know, whatever. And so that's a deviation from the core belief. In Islam, if you look at the core belief, we just said the word love never appears, you know, in the context of the Quran or of the Hadith. If you find a peaceful Muslim, he's gone away from his core belief. Now, there's a lot of peaceful Muslims, okay, which is a problem in itself sometimes. They're passive-aggressive. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, they take their religion, you know, kind of lightly. The South, you know, East, whatever, where there's a predominant majority of Muslims, you find, you know, people that are interviewed go, well, yeah, like some older woman I recall an interview with, she goes, well, yeah, I'm a Muslim, but I still like my beer every once in a while. And if I go, you know, to Mecca for the pilgrimage, I'll also combine it with a shopping trip. Okay. So there's a lot of, you know, light thinking Muslims, mostly because, you know, they don't really understand even their own religion. The Quran is not taught in the mosques. You know, what they get from the imam is what he thinks he should be telling the people, and a lot of times it's not from the Quran, especially if he wants to keep them together. Right. Now, some truth from the Quran. Okay, ignoring his claim that Saka's, that Abraham was the father of Christianity, which is not strictly true in the sense that is claimed in the quote, it's especially untrue that he's the father of Islam. Islam claims succession from Abraham only because the Arabs claim physical lineage to him through Ishmael. You know, we know your Genesis class, Ishmael wasn't of the spiritual lineage. Right? In fact, wasn't even a legitimate son in that sense. But Islam is the product of Muhammad and his followers and has absolutely no connection with Abraham as a religion. Here is, you know, from the Quran, Sutra 9:26, where it talks about fight against such of those to whom the scriptures were given as believe neither in Allah nor the last day, who do not forbid what Allah and his apostle have forbidden, and do not embrace the true truth until they pay tribute out of the hand and are utterly subdued. Now, this is the core of Islam. Okay, and notice, you know, the violent fight against such individuals. There's been listed at least 109 passages in the Quran that are battle passages that tell their, you know, followers to fight against anyone who doesn't believe in Islam. Also, 9:23, believers, do not befriend your fathers or your brothers if they choose unbelief in preference to faith. Wrongdoers are those that befriend them. So in the Quran, what this Chrislam is something that even the Muslims, strict Muslims, will not adhere to. They don't look at a blending of things, a blending of beliefs. And in fact, if you don't agree with them, you know, the alternative is either slavery or murder. No, they will kill you. Okay, now many such verses are found in the Quran. Muslims are taught to fight any person who will not submit himself to Muslim beliefs and Sharia law. One of the things, you know, I like to study sometime with, you know, with your Sharia law, basically, even if you look at it, you don't know what's going to account for you anyway, because the judge of the Sharia law pretty much depends on what side of the bed he gets up on, how he calls things. A lot of this, they kind of make it up as they go along. But here's a statement from a document of the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, the Brotherhood is the father of Hamas, you know, the major terrorist group in Palestine, and the promoter of terrorism in many countries. It's currently behind the unrest we're seeing in Egypt. Their intent is to take control of the country, just as in Syria and other places. Now, we're talking about the Muslim Brotherhood now in America. Their document, an explanatory memorandum on the general strategic goal for the group in North America, and it reads this way. The Ikhwa, that is the Muslim Brotherhood, must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within, in sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers, so that it is eliminated and God's religion, meaning Allah's, is made victorious over all religions. Okay, there's no compromise with these people. They have, from the beginning of Islam, attempted to rule others by persuasion, intimidation, and jihad. In fact, those who are the most faithful in Islam are those engaged in jihad of the most vicious kind. That is what the Quran teaches. Here's another specific from the Quran, Sutra 489, about non-Muslims, where it says, their real wish is to see that you become a disbeliever, as they themselves have disbelieved, so that you may become exactly like them. Now they're talking about their enemies, or people that want to befriend them. So you should not take friends from their ranks unless they migrate in the way of Allah. And if they do not, seize them and kill them wherever you find them, and do not take it under them as protectors or helpers. So in the eyes of a Muslim, anyone who's non-Muslim is either a slave or dead. That's the core belief of Islam. Now, there's something, too, that, you know, when we think of jihad, and most Muslims don't go along with, you know, the grand jihad or this the more violent, you know, way of doing it. But in an interview of Muslims in the United States, there were many of them that were interviewed, and they said something like 2% believe that, you know, beheadings and stuff like that, you know, were okay. Okay, now that doesn't sound like much, but 2% of the amount of Muslims that are in the United States mean 600,000 Muslims in the United States have nothing, you know, don't see anything wrong with being more violent about their religion and beheading infidels. Okay. And two, just because a lot of them don't believe it, one of the things that one of the experts of Islam has pointed out there is that, okay, even if they don't believe in violence, they do believe in a passive sort of aggression. Now, what that means, use an example, say, from the Old West. If a big land baron, a cattle baron, wanted to take over a settler's land, okay, there's one way of doing it, and that is to go in, you know, and, you know, kill the man, burn the house, whatever, and just take over the land. Okay, that's the violent way to do it. But if you didn't want, you know, a bad reputation, the easier thing to do is more passive-aggressive. Just move 10,000 head of cattle onto his land so that the crops get trampled, you know, the cattle turn, you know, knock the house over, and the man is forced off. And now that you have possession of the land, you know, it's yours by, you know, by right, and really not doing any people that are going to protest except this one little farmer, and who's going to listen to him against the big cattle baron. Now that sounds, you know, well, you know, different, but that's basically the way the passive aggressive Muslim looks at things. You know, why kill people when you can just, in a massive amount of people, just move in and take over? And that's what they're doing now in Europe, in Belgium, in France, whatever. They're just moving in. They're doing it in England and have basically almost, you know, taking over. They tried to do it in Australia, and the Prime Minister told them to go take a hike. You know, but at some point, although, oh, they're all peaceful and everything else, at some point you're going to have to start shooting them just to stop them. It makes you look bad, but yeah, to stop them, what are you going to do? I mean, they're having babies galore. You know, and they're becoming a massive amount of people, and they're just moving in. Okay? They believe in the jihad. They don't believe in the violent one, but they do believe in taking over your religion, your property, everything. And it's already happened in some cases in the United States. In Michigan, they're having a big problem. I recall one hospital where they got a Muslim doctor in. He got another one in. They started switching out the nurses. And before it all, nobody that wasn't Muslim was able to work there. Okay? Very passive-aggressive, you know, but they still gets the job done. Okay? Now, some truth about Islam. When it talks about Islam as a... when people talk about Islam just being a religion, they're either very ignorant or they're lying. It's not. You know, we're used to, you know, what our own sources are trying to put out there, that, you know, America, in America there's a separation of church and state. Now, the Constitution really doesn't make that, especially like the first, you know, Bill of Rights, you know, whatever, or amendment. In Islam, there is no separation of anything. Okay? That's why it says it is religious, it's legal, Sharia law, it is political, it is economic, it's social, and it's military as a society. It's a combination of all. When you look at a purely Muslim town or country or whatever, okay, the center of everything is the mosque. I mean, literally. In every street in the city, spokes out from that mosque. Everything is pointed to the mosque. That is where their religion is pronounced. That is where their politics are taught. And that is, you know, where everything takes place. There's no separation. So when they're talking about a religion moving in, they're also talking about an invading country or invading force coming in. And this is what they're trying to hide, especially around this quotation of religion of peace. It's not a religion, and it's not peaceful in no way, shape, or form. It's a military system bound by the belief that it is all directly from God or Allah. They have, you know, their politics are from Allah, their laws are from Allah, their religion's from Allah, everything's from Allah. As a religious cult, it has been antagonist to all other religions and cultures from the beginning of its inception. It started out, you know, Muhammad was illiterate, and you'll see some of this in the Quran if you ever, you know, read it in Arabic. It just doesn't make sense even to Arabs. This is why they kind of shine over it, or just kind of, oh, it's so above us that we can't understand it. But basically, you know, Muhammad couldn't read and write. So he had other people kind of do it for him, and he just kind of dictated. And they did the best they could in trying to interpret it. Now, because he couldn't do that, he tried to pass himself off as a prophet, especially among the Jews. At first, there wasn't an animosity. Yeah, but they knew what a prophet was, and he just picked up bits and pieces from the scriptures that he heard and tried to sell himself as a prophet of God. And, of course, they rejected him. They knew he didn't know what he was talking about. Now, we don't know what went on with Muhammad, but in the course of that, and this is part of their history, he came at it in a different direction. Because some of the Jewish communities weren't getting along. And so he got them together and convinced them he could be a dispassionate arbitrator. And they gave him full authority to arbitrate among the Jews. And from there, he took off. His hatred of the Jews, it's something that comes out in the Quran, and he's passed it on to his followers for the last 1,200 years. And a hatred of everybody else that doesn't go along with what they think. People were forced to accept the religious and the political doctrines of Muhammad, and the young were rigidly drilled on his pronouncements. This all had been true since that time. They picked up with the Catholic mantra. You ask a Catholic, they say, well, if you give us a child for the first 5 years of his life, we'll give you a Catholic forever. They took up that same philosophy. So in the madras, they take the children and they drill them in the Quran for 5 years. And that's all they learn. They don't learn, you know, any of the social graces or liberal sciences or anything. They just learn the Quran. Okay? And basically, they try to make a person a Muslim for the rest of his life. Now, what's scary about this is one of those madrasas is our president went through one. Okay? This is why, you know, I've seen him on videotapes mocking the Bible and referring to the Quran as the holy book. To the Muslim, one must accept no God but the Muslim God and Muhammad as his inspired prophet. They deny the deity of Jesus and the three persons of the Godhead. In fact, for them, this concept of Christianity is blasphemy. They accept Jesus, but just as another prophet like Moses and Muhammad. But the latter is the most important. And this is important to take up, too. As far as they're concerned, even though they look at all prophets the same, the next prophet in line always supersedes the ones previous to it. So they look at Muhammad as the superior prophet over Jesus and Moses. Now, this is interesting as you go into the Quran, if you're trying to talk with them, because you can find in basically, you know, this is one of the problems we run into. If you go to the beginning chapters of the Quran, you'll find some very peaceful verses. You know, Muhammad talks about, oh, we're all just people of the book, referring to Christians and Jews and stuff like that. You know, don't we have all the same God and all this kind of stuff? And he's trying to insinuate himself into a situation where he's passing himself off as, in this where people get the example, as, you know, religion of peace. However, as it goes on, the Quran gets more and more violent. And if you talk to scholars of the Quran, they'll say basically those earlier chapters of peace are superseded in authority by the later chapters. So that true Islam is the later chapters, the more violent. As far as they're concerned, Jesus was not raised from the dead. The Allah of Islam is not the God of Abraham that he served. Allah has a character copied by his followers that in no way resembles the God of the Bible. So when people say, well, God, Allah, they're all the same God. No. If you know anything about the character of either one of them, you know they're not compatible. The Jesus of Islam is not the Jesus of the Bible, and the message of Islam is not that of the gospel of the scriptures. The heaven of Islam, most people are getting aware of that, you know, the 70 virgins or whatever. You know, that's not the way the heaven is described in the Bible. In fact, comedians are starting to make a little mockery of the Islamic heaven. How can you have 70 virgins in perpetuity? You know, and one of the answers has been, well, God keeps making them, you know, over and over virgins. Yeah. Jesus told us, you know, there's no marriage and giving to marriage. We're like the angels. Totally different concept. You know, and more moral. The moral standards of Islam are in no way to be compared with the gospel of Christ. If you know what is taught, some of the things that Muhammad said, Jesus promises redemption. He gives hope. He promises that he can get us into heaven for eternal life. Muhammad didn't even know if he himself would be saved. Totally different than the people God picked, to deliver the scriptures to us. Okay. In fact, what a lot of them don't understand is that even if you get to heaven, you're not assured of being kept there. You can lose it. That's different than the concept of the Bible. In fact, where you find most of the people of God, especially the apostles, were very moral individuals, Muhammad wasn't. In fact, he got supposedly sanctions from Allah in order to have multiple wives and to indulge in a lot of other sinful things that he could, but he said his followers couldn't. There's a lot of hypocrisy in between what he said and what he did. The insight from the scriptures, the above is just the beginning. There can be no alliance nor fellowship with Islam, no Chrislam according to the verses of the Bible. Not only does the Quran not allow for it, the Bible doesn't allow for it. The passage that Justin read, there's no communion between light and darkness, between love and violence. It just doesn't happen. Further, as we look at 2 John 9:1, whoever goes onward and abideth not in the teaching of Christ, that is, within the framework of the sound doctrine that Christ has given us, you go beyond that and you start mixing with other things, John says you've lost your connection with Christ. Even Paul told the Jewish Christians, you go back into Judaism, you're now severed from Christ, you've fallen from grace. But he that abideth in the teaching hath both the Father and the Son. That's how you maintain your relationship with God. Further, in Galatians 1, 6 through 9, I marvel that you so quickly removing from what that called you into the grace of Christ into a different gospel. King James goes into another gospel, which is not another. We talked about this recently. That word another, the first one is heteros, meaning totally different. Heterosexual marriage is of two opposite sexes. The allos is something that's kind of the same thing. And Paul is saying the gospel you've moved into is not like the one you have. It's not just a different perspective of it. It's totally different. And that's what Islam is, totally different. Now, if you do that, there are some that trouble you, but he goes, but though we, that is, even if another apostle comes, or prophet or whatever, or an angel from heaven should preach to you any other gospel contrary to that which you've received, let him be anathema, let him be cursed. Cursed of God. Try to insinuate something else. How that woman priest saw Christ in Allah. I don't know what she was smoking, but it's impossible to look at the Quran and see Christ. Paul goes on, as we have said before, I say again, if any man who claims to be a prophet or a teacher or inspired individual, another prophet or whatever, if any man preaches unto you a gospel other than what we have received, again, you're now in a cursed state with God. That's the way he leaves it. Those who argue that Islam is a religion of peace, and that in fact the word Islam means peace, are terribly uninformed, duped, we might say, or they're just lying. And that's the part of a lot of this. They're just lying. The word means subjection, submission. Because what it is the Islamic religion subjugating every other religion and every other conception, even political, in its belief. That historically is what Muslims have done to people who reject their beliefs. They've made them slaves. In fact, they kind of shifted from making them dead to making them slaves because they found out you can get more out of them that way as a workforce and in the confiscation of all their properties. If one is truly seeking peace, especially peace with God, it can only come through obedience to Jesus Christ of the Scriptures, God's Son. This is what he said. Now, I am the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And the only peace that will last between men is that established by the tenets of Christianity, where true love prevails, even a love for enemies, and trying to reconcile them into a proper relationship with their Creator. That's the only way it works. You can't go around it in any way, shape, or form. And this is what we're invited to. The purity of the gospel of Jesus Christ is something that works in the world. It's been working for 2,000 years, even against the animosities of hostile religions. To try to meld them together is insanity. And it's just crazy. They don't go together like oil and water. The best thing to do is put your faith in the one true God, the one true scriptures that were delivered to his apostles and prophets, and to live your life according to that, no matter what. It will increase your life here 100-fold. God has promised this. Christ has promised this. And you will truly get an eternity in heaven that can't be taken away from you. It's a true salvation and not an iffy thing. It's one with serious facts about it, a serious drive to do the right thing, not only for yourself and your God, but your fellow human beings. And keeping that pure is the greatest thing we can fight for on a spiritual level. And that's what we're invited to do. Won't you come as we stand to sing?
What will you do with